Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Dr. Laura story when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. He made an observation. He said that Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by leaders of his craft, and someone that knew neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged his colleagues when he replied that there's no such thing at this date of world history in America as an independent press, and you know it and I know it, and there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinion to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know that, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. You know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, this New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and stop following after all these crazy scientists, these philosophers, these preachers, these politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now. The number's 417-273-4967. You can order that free package, 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us your email request, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this young woman, Christina Erickson, over here, and the Dr. Laura study. In case you just tuned in and you haven't been listening to the series of program, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, a talk show host, she's a lady, you know, that gives advice. People call in on a radio show, and she's like a Dear Abby on the radio. I've heard her time or two, and I wouldn't go out of my way to listen to the program, per se. I'm not interested in that kind of thing, but I didn't hear anything that came out of her mouth that was so obnoxious that I would want to, you know, raise hell with her in some way or another. But this Christina Erickson is a young woman, probably a college student this is several years ago now, but up in Sterling, Vermont. And she put a letter on the Internet, and I read that letter in program number one. I won't do it again, but it's a long treatise that pokes fun at Dr. Schlesinger, pokes fun at the Bible, and pokes fun at God, and it's humorous. I mean, it's a pretty funny letter, pretty funny story. It's a sorry letter because of the ignorance that it exposes. It's kind of like Jay Leno. He goes out on the streets, and he asks college students simple questions, you know, simple things like, where is the Panama Canal? If people, you know, like, blah, 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 and you'll have this college student, well, blah, 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 you know, who's buried in Grant's tomb? You know, the kind of questions that we used to see on Groucho Marx, you know, the consolation prize. Who's buried in Grant's tomb? If you could answer that, you get the consolation prize. And I'm always amazed at college students. Who was the president that threw a silver dollar across the Potomac River? I don't know whether he did or not. You know, the argument is that that's a lie. He never did it, but it was George Washington that was alleged to have thrown a silver dollar across the Potomac River. Who was the president that said, I cannot tell a lie, Father, I chopped the cherry tree down with my hatchet? Again, that was George Washington. But you'd think that people would know that, wouldn't you? I mean, you'd think that your kid learned that in public school. That's where I learned it, public school. And then they go out on the street, these simple little things, you know, they go out on the street and ask people, and mainly college kids, and these college kids don't know. They can't answer. It's part of the dumbing down process. Well, this girl here suffers from the dumbing down process, except that it's biblical dumbing down, which isn't too hard to do because, you know, people go to church. 65% of Americans go to church every Sunday. That's an amazing statistic. Hell, I don't think 65% of Americans have sex once a week, but they go to church once a week. Just goes to show you, church is more important than sex. But be that as it may, this young woman here, she wrote this series of questions and wrote this real neat letter to Dr. Schlesinger and said, hey, listen, can you answer these questions? These are the kind of questions that are asked of preachers. Preachers can't answer these questions either. Now, she's not asking these questions in a civil tone of voice either. Her intent is to make fun, to poke fun at the Bible. But had she asked these questions in a civil tone of voice and said, can you tell us why does God do that? Or why is that law that way? How does that law work? And why does it work that way? So I said, well, I'm going to take that up. That kind of tickles my curiosity here. And now our friend Christina, she wants to know in Leviticus 21, verse 20, she says that I may not approach the altar of God if I have a defect in my sight. Leviticus 21, 20 states that I may not approach the altar of God if I have a defect in my sight. Well, I have to admit that I wear reading glasses. Does my vision have to be 20/20, or is there some wiggle room here? That's her question. Now, that is kind of funny, in a way. What it really points out is that God is really kind of stupid, and he discriminates against people that are handicapped. And then he says they can't come to the altar, you know, if they've got this blemish in them. Well, now, I'm not really sure that we ought to be poking fun at God. I'm a little bit nervous. A guy that kills 450,000 Egyptian soldiers in the Red Sea in one afternoon in about 20 minutes doesn't strike me as being the kind of guy that you want to poke fun at. This isn't the kind of guy that you want to kick sand in his face. That's just my personal opinion. Now, Christina here wants to kick a little sand in this God's face. And it's kind of funny because these preachers that run around here, you know, these Holy Joes and Sky Pilots, they couldn't answer this question. And she wants to know, well, is there a little wiggle room here? Because I wear reading glasses, and it says here that if I've got a defect in my sight, I can't approach unto the altar. I'm religious. I'm one of those 65%. I go to church every week. And is there some way around that? Well, my answer to that, Christine, is no, no, no. And I'm sorry, there's no wiggle room here. None. Zero. Zilch. You, Christina, may not approach the altar of the living God. You can't even take the first step. But it really doesn't have anything to do with your eyesight or your vision. So let's analyze the statute that you cited. Here it is in Leviticus 21, verses 16 through 24. Here's the whole statute. It says, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto Aaron, saying, whosoever he be of the seed in their generations that has any blemish, let him not approach to offer the bread of his God. For whatsoever man he be that has a blemish, he shall not approach. A blind man, or a lame man, or he that has a flat nose, or anything superfluous. Or a man that is broken-footed or broken-handed or crook-backed or dwarf, you know, like the hunchback of Notre Dame, or hunchback or crook-backed or dwarf, or that has a blemish in his eye, or be scurvied or scabbed or has his stones broken. No man that has a blemish of the seed of Aaron, the priest, shall come nigh to offer the offerings of the Eternal made by fire. He has a blemish. He shall not come nigh to offer the bread of his God. He shall eat the bread of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy. Only he shall not go in unto the veil, nor come nigh unto the altar, because he has a blemish, that he profane not my sanctuary, for I, the Eternal, do sanctify them. And Moses told it unto Aaron and to his sons, and to all the children of Israel. And so Erica comes in here, or Christine Erickson, she comes in, she says, well, listen, I wear reading glasses, so, you know, is there a little wiggle room here for me to come up to the altar? Notice my answer? I said, no. No. It has nothing to do with your vision. You're a woman. You're a woman. No woman can come into the altar to start with. Now you're going to sit there and say, God is sexist. Okay, so God is sexist. This God is definitely sexist. I can't speak for the God of the Baptists and the God of the Jews and the God of the Buddhists and Muslims and Mormons. That's a different guy. This God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, gave us a statute. But this statute doesn't have anything to do with George Gordon or with Christina. It has to do with Aaronic priests. It says, of the seed of Aaron. I don't know, Christina, are you descended from Aaron? Have you traced your genealogy back? Maybe you are a descendant of Aaron. I don't know. But the mere fact that you're female precludes you from going in to offer an offering by fire. You've got another problem. You don't have a temple to work in to start with. You haven't been trained in the priesthood, number two, but at least I don't see any indication from anything that you've said so far that would lend any credence to your being a priest or a descendant of a priest. And the fact that you're female precludes you from the job to start with. It's kind of like men having babies. I know God is a sexist and he has discriminated against men because we can't have babies, but you know, that's the way life is. Who said life's a pair? It's the way it is. And there's some things that we can do and some things we can't, and some things we're authorized to do and some things we're not. Now, I'm not a Levite either, and so because I'm not a Levite, at least I don't know that I am. I could be, but if I am, it'll be a surprise to me. But I do know this, I trace my genealogy back, and I come from the tribe of Judah. I mean, I trace my genealogy back to that no-good scoundrel First King David Bruce of Scotland. You know, that chicken lily-livered sucker, you know, that betrayed Braveheart? Yeah, that's my ancestry. Nothing to brag about, but, you know, that's the way it is. So I can't go in there and offer an offering by fire either. I got a problem. I don't belong to the Levitical priesthood. I'm not an Aaronic priest. I didn't descend from the Aaronic priest. And there's no temple to work out of, and this is directly aimed at these people, this civil service group. Doesn't apply to us, doesn't apply to Christina, doesn't apply to about 99% of all the people that are out here. Just this one little group of people is the only people that applies to, and they probably don't even know who they are either. Notice here that there's a statute that says you shall not put a stumbling block before the blind or before the deaf. God is not opposed to deaf people. God is not discriminating against the deaf or the poor or the blind. Those that have epilepsy or handicapped or lost a leg or they're crooked back or they're the hunchback of Notre Dame. Maybe you're suffering from a birth defect. God's not discriminating against you. He told you very plainly that we're not to put stumbling blocks in front of you and that we're to take care of you. And you know, we do a pretty good job of doing that. But he went a step further and he said, now you may be in a wheelchair and you may have a special parking and a special license plate so that when you go into Walmart, you can park up close to the door. That's all well and good. And don't let George Gordon get in your way or take your parking place. He'll put a stumbling block in front of the handicap. Don't let Gordon take your parking place. That's why we have highway patrolmen and city policemen to give me a ticket when they catch me parking in those handicapped parking places, putting stumbling blocks in front of you, blind people and so on. They punish me when they catch me doing it. But he went a step further and he said, now I gave you the parking place in front of the Walmart door, but you can't come in to the temple and you can't offer offerings made by fire to me. You got that, sucker? Now, Aaron had a couple of boys, and they went in and they offered what God called strange fire. Strange fire. There's laws that regulate these Levite and Aaronic priests, and when they go in to do their job, you know, it's kind of like a judge. He goes in to do his job as a judge, and there are rules of court. Did you know that? Rules of court, and the judge has to follow those rules. Rules that don't apply to truck drivers and plumbers and carpenters, but they apply to judges. By God, they better perform. When they get into the courtroom, they got to do it. Well, these two boys of Aaron's, they got a little uppity one day, and they went in, and they decided they'd make some change in the rules. And they did. They changed the rules, and they offered what God called strange fire. He doesn't go on to elaborate as to what it was that they did. He just said that whatever they did wasn't according to the rules, so he killed them, both of them. Again, you know, you guys, you know, you talk about sweet Jesus, and you talk about love, and Jesus loves you, and are you saved, brother? You know, I listen to this crap all the time. And this guy ain't sweet. This is not the guy to be given the finger to. This is not the guy to go in here and start getting uppity with. It seems like, to me, this doesn't make any sense. It's like going into a bar, you know, and you walk up to some Hell's Angel over here, some guy that's about 6'14", weighs about 300 pounds, and you want to give this guy the finger? Hell, if it was me, I'd go stand down at the other end of the bar for fear that you might offend this guy. Keep your mouth shut. You know, these Hell's Angels guys ain't anybody to be dinking around with. Now, I know from my own personal experience that when you go into a bar and you look around and you say, oh, my God, you know, this place is filled with some pretty tough-looking characters. Are you really sure we want to drink in here? Are you really sure we belong here in the Blue Room or the Ritz? Maybe we ought to go down to TCBY, or maybe we ought to go to some other more family-oriented place, you know? There's some hard places, you know, hard-drinking places here. Water holes, they call them where I'm from. You know, there's some tough water holes out there in Idaho. Now, you go into a tough water hole, you know, you kind of keep your peace and hold your tongue. And I would think here that maybe we ought to keep our peace and hold our tongue. The boss here says that he doesn't want some, you know, hunchback of Notre Dame offering fire to him. He doesn't want him in the Holy of Holies, and he doesn't want him in the holy place. Now, you want to call him some names and call him, you know, a sexist or racist or discriminatory or something like that. He is pretty discriminatory. He's discriminating against these people. He says, I don't want him. Stay out of here. Like if I went to one of those tough water holes and some guy says, get out of here, we don't want you in here, you know, I'd probably just turn around and get the hell out of there while I can still walk. You know, you get inside there, you might not be able to walk out. All right. So Christina wants to know, is there any wiggle room? And the answer is, nope, there's no wiggle room at all. The statute says what it says, tells you what the answer is, and says, don't do that. This statute is directed to the Aaronic priests and no one else. You must be an Aaronic priest to enter the holy place to make an offering. To make an offering on the altar, you got to be an Aaronic priest. No girls allowed. And you must be a Levite. So you got to be a Levite and you got to be male. No girls allowed. Your name, Erickson's a dead giveaway that you're a Scandinavian from Denmark, the tribe of Dan, or Norway, the tribe of Benjamin, or Finland, the tribe of Issachar, or Sweden, the tribe of Naphtali. Now, God has made a law that no Levite with a blemish shall even approach the altar, let alone do the service thereon. And no one but an Aaronic priest or a Levite may do the office of a priest or make the sacrifice. You can see that in Numbers 3, verses 5 through 10, and Leviticus 17, verses 1 through 9. Now, Christina, you have hit the glass ceiling here. It may be unfair. It may be an unfair labor practice. Or it may be a discriminatory policy against the handicapped. But as long as political power comes from the muzzle of a gun, there isn't much that you can do to obtain a review in any court that I know of. So you're left with making fun of and ridiculing a dictator's directive. And you want to remember that God is a dictator. This God is a dictator, just like a king, just like your daddy. I remember my daddy. He was a dictator. My daddy said, go to bed at 8 o'clock. Now, he didn't go to bed at 8 o'clock. Hell, he'd go to bed at 10 o'clock or midnight or whenever he felt good and ready. But at 8 o'clock, little Georgie had to go to bed. And as I said earlier, it isn't wise to give the finger to a judge just before you learn the sentence. So there it is. Now, next, Christina wants to know, most of my friends get their hair trimmed, including the hair around their temples, even though this is expressly forbidden by Leviticus 19, verse 27. How should they die? Here, did you hear that? Let me read this to you again. I mean, this girl's got a real sense of humor. You know, next, Christina wants to know, most of my friends, she says, most of my friends get their hair trimmed, including the hair around their temples. Now, who's that aimed at? It's aimed at a little group of Jews over here that don't cut their hair. They don't cut their sideburns. They don't cut their sideburns. So she's making fun of this religious group that doesn't cut their hair. They are pretty funny looking, aren't they? I see funny religious people running around all the time. I don't say anything. I just kind of shake my head and I go, this guy's got his head right up his rectal region, doesn't he? I wouldn't tell that guy that, but I'm thinking that. Well, why would I think that? Well, because of the way he dresses. It's like the Amish guys, you know? You see these Amish guys. Now, the other day I had them come down. They put in a windmill for me. God, these guys are good workers. They don't even speak English. You'd be amazed at how fast they are. They don't use power tools. They use horses and buggies and you know, and they're fast. They work hard, you know? But you can tell there's something wrong with them by the way they dress, can't you? Just look at one. You can see there's something wrong with him. And here's Christina. She said, hey, just look at this Jew. You can tell there's something wrong with him. He cut his hair and sideburns. I mean, you know, all of us straight guys, we know something's wrong there. And even though it's expressly forbidden by Leviticus 19:27. Well, are you really sure that Leviticus 19:27 forbids that? I don't know, but we'll take a look at it. And then she says, well, how should they die? This guy doesn't cut his hair in a certain way, and so he should die. Does God want to kill people because of the way they cut their hair? Are you really sure that comes out of the Bible, or did you learn that in church? Did you go to Sunday school, Christina? Is that where you got that idea? Sunday school. I'll bet you that's what it was. Hey, kids, I've read the Bible from cover to cover, border to border, and I don't see anything in there like that. And that's why I always cite the scriptures that go along with it, and I expand, and I say, look, let's take all the scriptures on bondservant. It's a wild new concept. Let's not just read one. Let's read all 13 of them, and let's just, you know, go into our computer. You can get these computer programs now. It's really a hell of a neat deal. You get this computer program, and then you punch in bondservant, you punch the button, it'll print out all the statutes on bondservants on one piece of paper so you can get the whole law right in front of you. Now, a lot of you kids out there have degrees after your names, and you went to school, and you're real educated, and you can read real good. Why don't you try reading the Bible just by yourself? Instead of believing the preacher or the priest, why don't you read it for yourself? I mean, after all, you call yourself educated, don't you? You claim that you're literate and you can read, can't you? Now, I've showed you that this girl can't read. She's been to college. That's what her problem is. Now, let's test this. In Leviticus 19:27, it says, you shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shall you mar the corners of your beard. Where does it say there that you shall not cut the sideburns on your head? It says you shall not round the corners of your heads. What is rounding the corner of your head mean? You ever heard that term before? Rounding the corner of your head. What does that mean? Well, some of these Jews over here, their interpretation, their construction, what they believe, they read that and they came up with a belief. And they think that they shouldn't cut their sideburns. And so they cut their hair, but they don't cut their sideburns. Well, that looks kind of strange. The Mohawk Indians, you know, they cut all the hair off their head except the strip down the middle. And that looks pretty strange. And, you know, and I imagine that the people must look at us, you know, here in the Western world and say, oh, my God, look at those guys. They have a flat top haircut. They got a butch, a crew cut. They got a Telly Savalas, you know, the skinhead haircut and one thing and another. And so as you look at the way people cut their hair, people have different ways of cutting their hair. And this girl wants to know, how should they die? Again, is there any place in the Bible? Let's just listen. There's three more here on hair. 1 Corinthians, the other three are New Testament, by the way. 1 Corinthians 11, 14, and 15, does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a shame to him? Hey, have you ever seen the pictures of Jesus? Doesn't he always have long hair? The Bible says it's a shame for a man to have long hair. And Jesus has got long hair, doesn't he? Hey, doesn't that send you a little signal that maybe these religious guys and these church people over here, hey, they probably have good religion. They just got bad law. That's all. And they don't follow the law of God, and they don't follow the scriptures. They've got their own doctrines. My daughter was over here the other day. She belongs to a youth group, a Methodist youth group, a little local group of kids, you know, from the local school. And they got a youth leader over there. And so this youth leader over there came up with something. I forgot exactly what it was. And my daughter pointed out that it's unscriptural. And the youth leader said, well, I don't care whether it's scriptural or not. That's what we're going to do here. I'm the youth group leader. You know, so there you are. Well, my daughter didn't participate in the program because it wasn't scriptural. The rest of the kids did, and the youth leader did. And the youth leader of the local Methodist church just said flat out, I don't care whether it's scriptural or not. I'm the youth leader, and that's what we're going to do. Political power comes from the muzzle of a gun. My daughter had a choice to make, and she made the choice. She said, well, screw off. I'm not doing it. And she didn't. Hebrews practice the law. Christians do whatever they want. But then Christians get a lot of cancer and heart attack and strokes, and they die young, and they have a lot of problems, and they wonder why. And they write letters here to the law school and say, oh, my God, look at these problems that I'm having. And you got this girl here, you know, Christina, and she's in effect saying, well, how should they die? There isn't anything in that statute that says there's a death penalty for having long hair. Men run around with long hair in our society today, at least here in the United States. I say that's more of an abomination than this Jew over here who cuts his hair but doesn't cut the sideburn. 1 Timothy 2:9, in like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array. Women today, they spend their time in the beauty parlor getting their hair done, don't they? Just can't just comb their hair and act like normal people. I mean, they've got to have their hair done. Have you had your hair done? And in 1 Peter 3:3, who is adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or putting on of apparel. Nothing in the four chapters that deal with hair or hairstyles here in the Bible has anything to do with capital punishment or dying. You know, you don't kill people because of the way they cut their hair. You might laugh at them behind the scenes. You might talk about them at the dinner table, but, you know, like I look at the Amish guys and then I talk about them at the dinner table, but not to their face. I sneak around behind their back, you know, and I'm a backbiter and I talk about them behind their backs. See? And I say, hey, did you see those Amish guys? Hey, did you see them Jews didn't cut their sideburns? But you know, to be polite, you know, you don't make fun of these people in public. In fact, I don't even make fun of them. What do I care how these Amish guys dress or how they cut their beards? What do I care about this Jewish guy, whether he wants to cut his hair or not? What do I care about some long-haired hippie that doesn't cut his hair? If he was interested in the Bible, he would see that it's a shame for a man to have long hair. And he cut it. How long is long? I don't know. The Bible didn't say how long is long. The guy with a crew cut says, well, anybody that's got hair that touches his ears. I remember my daddy would look at me and he'd say, don't you think it's about time you got a haircut? Boy, call me boy. Hey, boy. When my hair touched my ears, it was time to get a haircut. And that's the way it was. And maybe it wasn't your house, and that's why you got long hair. Well, 1 Corinthians 11, 14, and 15, Paul points out nature itself, or in street lingo, common sense tells us that a man with long hair is a shame. That's why until recent history in this country, men cut their hair and women didn't. Now, after 50 years of college education, the women are cutting their hair and the men are wearing their hair long, meant for a woman's glory or beauty. So, you know, when women have long hair, my wife has long hair, real long hair. In fact, it's down below her bottom, you know, it's down below her butt. That's how long her hair is. I'm not the longest hair in the world, but she's got long hair. And a long hair to a woman is a glory. Who said so? God. Evidently, he likes long hair. So if I was a female and I knew that the boss liked girls with long hair, I think I'd let my hair grow. I think I would. And now that I know that the boss thinks it's a shame for men to have long hair, that's why I cut my hair, keep it short. I cut my hair and I keep it short because I know that's what the boss likes. And what I'm trying to do is to get a job from the boss. I want the boss to give me a lucrative position in the kingdom of heaven. I'm a brown nose, and I don't make any bones about it. I'm a brownie, and I'm seeking a position. And I figure that the best way for me to get that position is to do what the boss likes. You know, I'm an old-timey boss myself, an old-timey employer, and I can tell you from personal experience, there's some guys that I like and there's some guys that I don't. So when a guy comes out on the job site and he's wearing tennis shoes, I don't like that. So the first time you show up on the job site wearing tennis shoes, I'm going to make a snide remark like, those shoes that you got on aren't OSHA approved. And they're not approved by anybody that I've ever seen on a construction work site wearing tennis shoes. You know, it's like a guy going to work in the woods, you know. I work in the woods, and there's certain gear that a logger wears in the woods. And there's certain gear that an electrician wears on the job, and tennis shoes ain't one of them. Got that? Same thing with a carpenter, you know. And so when I see a guy come out on the job, and he's wearing bib overalls, and he's got a T-square and a hammer, and he's got it in the right spot, and he's wearing lace-up work shoes, you know, high tops, and he looks like he's a construction man, you know, that's the kind of guy I want to hire. That's the kind of guy I'm looking for. The guy that knows what the hell he's doing on the job site. Maybe he can't drive a nail straight, but then hell, he looks like he can. He's got a hammer, and it's in the right spot. He's got shoes. He's got bib overalls. He's got a carpenter's pencil, and his carpenter's pencil is tucked into the little carpenter's pencil holder in his chest pocket. You know, so he comes out. He says, well, he looks like a carpenter. He walks like a carpenter. He acts like a carpenter. Now let's see if he can cut a set of sawhorses, and we'll find out if he's a carpenter or not. But you know, one of the first things you got to do is you got to walk the walk. You got to act like you knew what the hell you're talking about or what the hell you were doing. And so as I pointed out here in 1 Corinthians 11, 14 and 15, Paul points out that nature itself, just common sense, tells you that you ought to cut your hair, boys. I think that what you're trying to do here, Christina, is poke fun at Hasidic Jews who let the hair on their sideburns grow long. And the Messiah made a comment about the Jews who make the law of God of no effect by their tradition. I think that's a better way to put that, their tradition. That's their tradition, and it doesn't come from the Scripture. But so what? So why do you poke fun at their religious practice or beliefs? Do you make fun of cripples and blacks and Jews? Isn't that politically incorrect? If nothing else, it's rude, and it tells us something about the person who would act or speak like you, or like you're speaking right now, or doing in this email. And finally, where do you get the idea that death was the penalty for cutting your hair? Now, can you show me from the Scripture any such preposterous penalty? Well, there are 24 capital crimes in the Bible, but haircuts is not one of them. Haircuts is not one of them. Now, rounding the corners of your head is the pagan practice of shaving your head bald, like Yul Brynner and Telly Savalas, or like these guys call skinheads today. Marring the corner of your beard is like Colonel Chicken and his goatee, or wearing a mustache. Now, either wear a beard or shave. Grow hair and keep it cut. Don't shave it off, is the instruction. You know, I've got a beard. Now, the Amish people are in violation of that statute. They grow a beard and then cut off the mustache. No. That's marring the corner of your beard, troops. Or they'll cut all of it off but keep this goatee. That's what the Egyptians did. And that's why back in Moses' day, the Israelites wore a full beard. Boys ought to wear beards and girls shouldn't. You girls ought to keep your beards shaved off. And you boys ought to let your beards grow. Now, if you want to shave, that's fine. It's not against the law to shave. But if you're going to shave, shave. But don't mar the corners of your beard. And if you're going to grow hair, grow hair. You know, but keep it cut short. Don't shave it all off like Telly Savalas. So there's the answer to that, Christina. Hey, I'm a little overtime. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School or The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, here's another one from Christina. Another humorous question from Christina. She says, next Christina wants to know, she says, I know from Leviticus 11, 6 through 8, that touching the skin of a dead pig makes me unclean, but may I still play football if I wear gloves? May I play football if I still wear gloves? You know, footballs are called pigskin. You know, they talk about, hey, we're gonna play with the pigskin today. Well, I looked that up. I didn't really go. I had Dirk look it up for me. I said, what are footballs made out of? They're made out of cowhide. Baseballs are made out of horsehide. But footballs are made out of plastic primarily. But if they're not made out of plastic, they're made out of cowhide. And they're not made, never have been, and they're not made out of pig skin. I don't know where that ever came from. I begin to wonder, where did pig skin for a football come up? Maybe it's because the football is shaped like a pig, and because a football is hard to hang on to, and it doesn't bounce straight, and it bounces all over the place. It's an odd-shaped ball. So there you go. But anyway, Christina wants to know, and she's kind of humorous. She says, well, you know, if the Bible says, Leviticus 11, 6 to 8, that touching the skin of a dead pig makes me unclean, kind of poking fun at this concept of unclean. Well, what would happen if you had a dead coon and you touched him? You'd be unclean until the evening because he's an unclean animal. What about a dead possum, a dead snake, a dead, you know, anything that's dead and unclean? An unclean animal is one of those animals that doesn't chew its cud and have cloven hooves. Or it's an animal like a bird, you know. A bird has to have three toes forward, one back, have a crop, and sing a song. It's got to have those three attributes. Otherwise, it's an unclean bird, like an eagle is unclean. Or a buzzard. What if you picked up a buzzard or an eagle? See, it'd be unclean until the evening. Or shrimp and lobster and clams and oysters and things like that. Those are unclean. And we're to hold their carcasses in abomination. And so in Leviticus 11, verses 6 through 8, here we go again, Christina. Methinks thou doth protesteth too much. You should know that footballs are not made from pigskin. Footballs are made from plastic and or leather. So let's look at the statute in question first. First thing to do here. In verse 5, let's take a look at Leviticus 11, verses 5 through 8, where it says, and the coney, because he chews the cud, but divides not the hoof, he's unclean unto you. Well, a coney is called a rock rabbit. Number 6, and the hare, because he chews the cud and divides not the hoof, he's unclean unto you. Hare. Well, that's like a jackrabbit. And the swine, though he divides the hoof and be cloven-footed, yet he chews not the cud, he's unclean unto you. So a pig, he's got cloven hooves just like a cow, but he doesn't chew his cud. Verse 8, of their flesh shall you not eat, and their carcass shall you not touch. They're unclean to you. All right, so that's fairly easy. Let's see if I can carry that one up. Had a coon come up on the back porch the other night, caught him in a trap, took him down and drowned him. Now I got to remove him from the trap. Remove him. And when I remove him, am I going to reach in and pick him up? No, sir. See, I can see the statute here. It says, don't touch this dead animal. I could touch him if he was alive, but not after he's dead. All right, so I'm going to open the trap, and I'm going to pick it up, and I'm going to dump him out on the ground. Now I've got to move him. I'll take a pitchfork, and I'll pick him up with the pitchfork, and then I'll throw him where I want to throw him, dispose of his dead carcass. I'm not going to touch him. I'll be very careful. But if I touch him, I'm unclean until the even, which means that I've got to bathe myself with water. It means I've got to come in the house and take a shower. Why would we want to do that? You know, religious people, they say, oh, he's got to turn around three times and shake bat's knuckles under the full moon. You know, it's a religious ceremony. There's nothing religious about this. It's a health statute. Health, nothing more, nothing less. Why is it a health statute? Unclean animals carry disease. They carry ticks. Ticks carry Lyme disease. Rats carry fleas, and the fleas carry bubonic plague. Let me tell you, kids, people that don't touch rats, don't get rats off, fleas off rats and give them bubonic plague. During the Middle Ages, when the bubonic plague was running around Europe and killing people by the tens of thousands, it didn't kill the Jews. And God had just made the Christians livid. Because picture this, you're living in a town, and people are dying like flies, but the Mormons aren't dying. And so right away, you say to yourself, well, there's something wrong. If the Mormons ain't dying, the Mormons must be poisoning our water. The Mormons must be doing something to us, because they're not doing it to them. And if it was just happening by happenstance or accident to everybody, it would be happening to the Mormons. And let me tell you something about these Mormons. I do a little research every once in a while, and I found out that the Mormons live longer than the average Christian. Did you know that? Now, do you think that the Mormons are out here poisoning you Christians because they live longer than you do on average? But see, those Mormons, they're a little pedantic. They don't drink. They don't smoke. Well, right there, that ought to tell you quite a bit. They're not dying from cirrhosis of the liver or lung cancer. They don't smoke and they don't drink. That's two things. Then they don't drink coffee, so they're not being all bummed out, you know, or strung out on caffeine. you know, they're kind of straight-laced people, and they're kind of funny, but they cut their hair, and, you know, they look, and they live a little longer because of their diet. Now, they eat pig, and they get cancer, just like all the rest of you people do. I say all the rest of you people, I don't, because I don't eat pig, but, you know, they do, and they get cancer. And when you Mormons out there quit eating pig, you'll quit getting cancer, too. So you want to get rid of heart attack and stroke, quit eating fat, and you want to get rid of cancer, quit eating pig. Well, unclean meat. And that'll give you the well-rounded diet. Now the Jews weren't dying back here during the Middle Ages because they weren't touching the dead rats and weren't touching the dead people, dead bodies, because it's against the law to touch a dead human body. Did you know that? And if they did touch one, then they went over and they washed themselves. You know, they got some soap out, you know, some of that borax, and they washed themselves, got the disease off of their hands, and they didn't ingest it, you know, when they were picking their nose and eating it or whatever, and so therefore they didn't get bubonic plague as often or as severely as the rest of the population. And so I've looked at other populations, you know, Seventh-day Adventists, you know, they're kind of like the Mormons. They don't eat unclean meat, they don't smoke, they don't drink. And they live a little longer and have a little bit better health than you Mormons do, because, see, they don't eat meat. So that means they're not eating unclean meat. Not that you can't eat meat, it's that you can't eat unclean meat. All right, so did you start to get the drift here? All right. It's a health statute. It doesn't have anything to do with religion. See, you religious guys, you read that religion in there because you want to read religion in there. The Bible isn't a religious book. It's a law book. Law, history, and prophecy. That's what it's all about. Well, these animals are spoken of here, the coney, a rock rabbit, the hare, a jackrabbit, and the swine is a pig. The statute tells us three things. Three things. These animals are prohibited as food. They show one element of a clean animal, but not both. Cut and split hoof, and they don't touch their carcass. So we're instructed not to touch their carcass. The document speaks for itself. It's a health and sanitation law. We Hebrews practice this law in the same way that we don't touch our feces, play in sewage, or lick the pus out of our sores. Let me repeat that. You know, Hebrews practice this law concerning touching dead animals in the same way that we do not play in our poops. We do not play in sewage, and we don't lick pus out of sores. Now, those sound to be, you know, that sounds kind of disgusting, but as we were talking earlier about unclean meat, not really. You know, people that live in third world countries, they drink the water that their sewage runs into, and then they wonder why they've got cholera and malaria and all these infectious and contagious diseases, because they live like animals, and they die like animals. They live like animals. They shouldn't, but then that's their choice. They do it. Somebody comes along and says, oh, they don't have to do that. Excuse me. We Americans, we don't play in sewage here. We're pretty careful about the way we dispose of it. As a result of that, we don't have very much malaria or cholera here, infectious diseases. Very, very rare here. Very, very common in Africa. And very, very common that they have their sewage and they have their drinking water kind of running together. Boys and girls, you need to keep your drinking water and your sewer water separated. Separated. But I wouldn't throw rocks at you for doing it. You know, if you want to play with your poops and you want to play in the sewage or you want to lick pus out of your sores, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, Christina. But it doesn't make good sense. Now, baseballs are made out of horse hide. A dead horse is unclean. Don't touch his dead carcass. But if someone else does and then makes horse hide for baseballs, it's okay for you to play baseball because the cured hide no longer has any germs or parasites on it to infect you. See, that's what the tanning process does. Tanning hides is like sterilizing a doctor's instruments. You know, you go to the dentist's office. Did you know that those tools that he's sticking into your mouth, do you know he was sticking those into other people's mouths? Did you know that? All right. Now, the dentist, he's got this little machine called an autoclave over there. And he's very, very careful. Well, he's supposed to be. We presume he is. He wears gloves on his hands because he's concerned about getting AIDS himself. So, you know, he's sticking his fingers in your mouth, and he's real concerned about germs. You know, he's pretty knowledgeable. Your dentist is a pretty smart guy. He got letters after his name. Went to college. He puts those tools in that autoclave, heats it up real hot, and kills all the bacteria and germs on it. Yeah, he does that. That's so that when he sticks them in your mouth, he isn't passing the germs that were in somebody else's mouth into your mouth. I think that's a real good idea. I like that. I like my dentist because he does that. I suppose if I was over in Africa, some dentist would be using these tools out of one guy and stick them in the mouth of the next guy and the next guy and the next guy. I mean, that's like drug addicts that don't sterilize their needles and wonder why they get AIDS. Elementary health here. You know, this is health 101. So once the hide is cured, you know, we don't need to be concerned about touching it. We're not talking religion here. We're talking health. Now, I suppose if you were religious, there'd be some kind of a taboo that goes along with that, some kind of a voodoo curse or something. I don't know. But that isn't what you get in the Bible. You get that from religious people and preachers and guys like that. You don't get it out of the Bible. Read it for yourself. I mean, you people claim to be educated, literate, went to college, got letters after your name. But, you know, when people go to pick, oh, I can't understand the Bible, well, I have to go to the priest and have him explain it to me. Hell, how can the priest explain the Bible to you? He can't even read it himself. He doesn't know what the hell it says. That's why you people are all confused. No, just go out there and read it for yourself. All you literate people, you know, if you can read, just read it. And God is pretty straightforward, you know. Just take a look at these statutes again. It says, and the coney. Now, maybe you don't know what a coney is, but damn it, you got a dictionary, don't you? Go look up coney, C-O-N-E-Y. It's a rock rabbit. A rabbit. It's a type of rabbit. A hare. It's a jackrabbit. Chews its cud, has paws. Doesn't have cloven hoof. Go look up cloven hoof. I'll tell you. Horses don't have cloven hoofs. Cows do. Can you follow that? All right. So you can play baseball, you know, without gloves, you know, as you wish. Now, we're also instructed not to touch dead humans, but how can we dispose of the body if we can't pick it up? Well, it's a disease statute. It's a health and sanitation law. The law tells you to leave it lay, but if you must or do touch it, then you're unclean until nightfall, called even. You must bathe yourself like a surgeon preparing for surgery to protect yourself and others from disease and or parasites. Parasites. And note, this was 2,900 years ago, before modern science discovered disease-causing bacteria, viruses, and pathogens, before they had microscopes, children. Now, either Moses was a pretty smart guy, or else, you know, just looking at it pragmatically, there was somebody smarter than him that we call God that was revealing to him what Moses didn't know about disease. Hey, I'm about out of time again. Well, we'll finish this up next time. We've got three more to go, or four more to go. Four quickies. But let me remind you in leaving today that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Okay, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.